And it's possible we go to 3D and like we're possibly thinking everything will be fine. But it's possible that we may be missing some crucial microphysics that could naturally increase the heating rate. So, neutrinos or through some process. So this is what I'm going to talk about. So I'll briefly first talk about the formalism of neutrino oscillations, and then talk about neutrino heating in the post-shock region. We've seen this a couple times today. Then about the influence of collective neutrino oscillations on shock revival and the prospects of this mechanism. Please ask any questions if you're confused. So the basics of neutrino oscillations is that a neutrino will be emitted in some flavor state, say electron neutrino, but that's not the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian of the system. So those are the mass eigenstates. And the mass eigenstates and the flavor eigenstates are related through a mixing matrix that looks like this. C just means cosine, S is sine, the ones and twos mean the mixing angles. Theta 1, 2, theta 1, 3, example. So you create a neutrino in a flavor state, it actually propagates in the mass eigenstate, and it propagates like this. This is the time evolution, which depends on the Hamiltonian. And then after you evolve your neutrinos for some time, you convert back to the flavor basis. That's what you observe. You observe the flavors. And then your neutrinos will look different than when they were emitted. So that's the basics of neutrino oscillations. Vacuum oscillations are the simplest. The Hamiltonian just depends on the difference in the mass squareds of the energies of the different neutrinos. And this is just an example of vacuum oscillations. You begin with a new E in red, and as it, this is kilometers, you can't really see, for I think a 10 MeV neutrino. Your new E, the probability of observing a new E at 20 kilometers will be much less than the probability that was emitted at, but you'll be seeing mu neutrinos and tau neutrinos instead. This is just vacuum oscillations. Things get more complicated when you start adding, for example, matter. The matter itself introduces an extra potential into the Hamiltonian, which then influences the evolution of the neutrinos. So the dominant one is forward scattering off electrons, neutrino electron scattering. This gives you the MSW potential. This is what would be relevant for neutrinos in the sun, for example. And it just depends on the net electron lepton fraction. So in the sun, you don't have to worry about this guy at zero, but for supernova, you would have to worry about that. And collective oscillations. this occurs then when you have not just a large presence of electrons, which are leptons, but also a large presence of neutrinos themselves, which are also leptons. This potential is a little more complicated because you're dealing with now neutrino-neutrino forward scattering. The potential goes like this. So this is a function of radius. Your electron density will fall off with radius. This guy is a function of radius as well. Two reasons. One, the interaction angle between the neutrinos, as you get further and further away from the neutrino sphere, will get smaller and smaller and smaller. So this falls off for large r, like 1 over r squared. Then you also have just the depleting of the neutrino flux due to the fact you're increasing in radius. So this goes as 1 over r squared. The phi is just the flux at the neutrino sphere. So this is then, phi is the number density at the neutrino sphere. No, so phi is the flux at the neutrino sphere. I always get that one confused. So these three Hamiltonians, your vacuum Hamiltonian, your matter Hamiltonian, and your collective Hamiltonian, will then influence the evolution of your neutrinos. So in density matrix formulation, the evolution of your neutrino fields will just go as the commutator of the Hamiltonian and the neutrino field itself. So one for neutrinos and then another evolution equation for the antineutrinos. This is a 3x3 matrix for your three different flavors, or 2x2 if you do a two-angle approximation. The evolution is complicated because, so for vacuum it's easy, matter it's a little harder. Collective it's very hard because the collective potential itself depends on the neutrino fields and depends on the other neutrino fields, so the anti-field. So it's nonlinear, and you also have couplings of these equations. So it makes the collective, dealing with collective oscillations very complicated. This is will be a movie of the evolution of two spectra. So blue is the electron neutrino spectra, and red is nu x spectra, so mu or tau, it's up to you. This is for neutrinos, this is for antineutrinos. You don't see them now, but there's dashed curves, which is just what you see now. I'll describe the simulations that these come from in a bit, but I just want to show you the movie now since we're talking about the collective oscillations. So nothing really happens at the beginning, and then you start to see the oscillations. Your spectra undergo basically a complete conversion from one flavor to the other flavor due to collective neutrino oscillations. This jumping up and down is natural. If I was to show you the, if I was wanted to make that jumping up and down smooth, the movie would be 3 minutes instead of 1 minute. So you'll see this on the next slide too. So eventually they settle in almost the, like I said, a complete swap of spectra between electron type and X type. You get some weird stuff happening for low energies for electron neutrinos. This is because the conversion that's happening is an electron neutrino and an anti-electron neutrino will, an electron anti-neutrino, will convert to a nu X and a nu X bar. But this happens a pairwise conversion, and if you have more electron neutrinos than electron antineutrinos, you'll have some excess of electrons, electron neutrinos, and they all pile up at low energies. So this is what's called a spectral split. And it happens at some energy that is determined basically by the electron neutrino excess. This is inverted. I didn't say that. This really only works could potentially only work for inverted hierarchy because of the sign of the vacuum term. Pardon me? So this has a very small theta 1-3, a non-zero theta 1-3, and I'm a standard theta 1-2. So sine squared theta 1-2 is 0.5 or 0.3, something. Whether it's sine squared or tan squared, I don't know. So this is versus radius, the survival probability. So if you start with an electron neutrino, what's the probability it will survive out to some radius? These oscillations are what you were seeing, the spectra jumping up and down. So very fine, very high frequency oscillations. And this is these low energy neutrinos basically converting back at large radius, low energy neutrinos. Okay, so switching now to a little bit of theory on neutrino heating. So neutrinos diffusing from the core, or accretion neutrinos, will deposit some net energy, have net energy transfer to the matter in the gain region. We've seen plots like this before today. This is just a 1D calculation. It's meant for graphical purposes. And the neutrino mechanism has its roots in basically you want to increase this heating in the gain region. increase the heating and possibly re-energize the shock. Phenomenologically, you can describe the heating like this. So basically, due to electron neutrinos and anti-electron antineutrinos, you're integrating basically over the gain region, the number density of target nucleons, so either protons or neutrons, depending on your neutrino, and then charge current cross-section with the matter involved with the neutrino spectra. This will basically give you your heating, something like 10 to the 51 ergs per second. You can collapse it down like this. It's a little nicer. It's basically some measure of a cross-section times the mean squared energy of the neutrino spectra times the luminosity times some column density of nucleons between the gain radius and the shock radius. Let me make that actual slide appear. I spilled the beans. So we've done exploratory simulations with Vulcan 2D to test the effect of collective neutrino oscillations. We use 11.1 progenitor from Woosley et al., 2002, and the Shannon equation of state. Evolution is pretty standard. There's no explosion. The shock goes out to about 300 kilometers. You see lots of sassy motion here. The red is the south pole, the blue is the north pole, and the black is the average. The average shock radius is decreasing with time. Electron neutrino sphere is shown here in green. The gain radius is shown in dashed black. The hashed region is the region where 75% of the net heating occurs. So it's concentrated near the gain radius. This is because the density is highest right at the gain radius. The density drops off as roughly r to the minus 3. So most of your matter is very close to the gain radius. That's where most of your heating happens. So we calculate the neutrino critical radii, I'll call them, two different ways. One is through a dynamical evolution. So we take the neutrino spectra from the neutrino sphere. We put them in this full, a single angle approximation collective neutrino oscillation code to evolve them. That's what the movie you saw basically dynamically evolve them. And see where you get 5% conversion. Those are the black dots. And the green dots is a 90% conversion. The solid lines are analytical approximations, which basically tell you roughly when the neutrinos will start to oscillate and roughly when they're completely finished their oscillations, which is roughly 5 and 90%. So they match up pretty well. One thing I haven't said, which I'm going to go back and say. So why would we want to look at this in the first place? So the interesting part about the NUX spectra is they're much harder. So they have a higher mean squared energy than the electron type spectra. This is because they're emitted deeper in the protoneutron star because they don't have charge current interactions. So the mean squared energies of the NUXs are higher. And after you do this flip, say you completely converted, now your electron neutrinos will have that mean squared energy with a higher mean squared energy and have a higher, potentially higher heating rate. That's what was in this slide. Your heating rate goes as the mean squared energy of the neutrinos, roughly. So that's why the collective oscillations are possibly very exciting. Next slide. But this really only going to do anything if you can convert your neutrinos before a significant amount of your heating takes place. So that would be down in the 75% region. And so they're quite far away from that region. This is the same, but using a 15 solar mass progenitor from Wusler et al. 2007. It has higher accretion rates. This suppresses the development of the SASE. The shock is at basically a lower radius. And so these neutrino oscillations will happen outside the shock, even more so than in the 11.2. This plot has, so four things on it. Blue is for the 11.2 model, red is for the 15 solar mass model. The blue is if we take the, if we take any matter outside of this, these black dots, and we say that it has extra heating due to the presence of, or due to the increase in mean squared energy. So outside these dots, we heat with the mean squared energy of the new X neutrinos. So it's a higher heating, it will increase your heating. So this plot is the heating after you take that into account divided by before minus one. So this is your expected enhancement of the neutrino heating due to the increased mean squared energy. So it's pretty small, because as I said, these swaps are happening very close to the shock, and you don't have a lot of matter out there to heat. So that's why this heating enhancement is so small. And again, just to point out why this would be interesting, if you did happen to completely flip your spectra inside the gain region, then you would have possibly a much bigger heating enhancement. So 100%. So double your heating, basically. So that's why this is potentially so interesting. I'll quickly say this. So there's another paper recently that also looked at this as well, so collective neutrino oscillations in supernova. They've used a multi-angle code, which took into account multi-angle suppression due to neutrino oscillation. So it's something that, since we're using a single-angle approximation code, we can't get out, but we can estimate its effect. If the electron, the potential due to the presence of electrons is too high, then this will suppress the oscillations, and that's what you're seeing here. If the electron, or the potential due to the electron density, which are all these red lines, are higher than these 1 over r squared black lines, then oscillations may be suppressed due to multi-angle effects. So this is in addition to what we see suppresses the neutrino oscillations even more. Okay, so the question is, should we expect this to be relevant in maybe different codes or different EOSs, more dimensions, different neutrinos? Models with higher accretion rates not only suppress the SASE, which you saw in the previous plot, but they lead to larger neutrino sphere radii and larger neutrino densities. Maybe. And so we chose these low mass, the 11.2 and the 15, for this reason. There's, people look at this for collective neutrino oscillations, and it's potentially interesting. Roughly, you can write down this analytic approximation to where neutrino oscillations begin. It looks something like this. It'll scale as the neutrino number density to the 1/4 power and the radius of the neutrino sphere square root. And so in order to get this down a factor of 2, you're going to have to decrease these guys by a lot. This would have to go down by 16. This would go down by 4. Even if this went down by 2 and this went down by 8, then you could do it, but that's a lot. I mean, decreasing your neutrino luminosity by a factor of 10 is below the 11.2 is pretty much impossible. The same thing with different equations of state. You're going to change your location of the neutrino sphere, your total number density, but it's not enough to significantly change this. You might push your shock out larger and heat more of the matter, but again, if you're not below that gain region, around 100 kilometers, you're not going to be able to do much. So not so pessimistic. And so on this slide, when I talk about neutrino evolution, I'm not talking about the transport like we've been talking about for most of the day. It's the the dynamical evolution of the neutrino fields calculating the oscillations. So we use a single angle approximation. Okay, so not optimistic yet. One more pessimistic point. Multi-angle effects may lead to larger swap radii. Both these multi-angle suppression, I had that slide on before, but also just regular multi-angle neutrino oscillations may suppress this to larger radii as well. If you're, this little bar should be on top of this guy. So if these guys are similar, then you'll have something called multi-angle decoherence. And so in our simulations, there are not enough that we would suspect this to be the case, but given different progenitors, it might be the case. And then your spectra will equilibrate, and for that, though, you really need a full multi-angle code to look at it, or a full Boltzmann treatment of the neutrino oscillations. And this is even more complicated than the neutrino transport we're talking about now. You need many, many more energy bins and many more angular bins to accurately calculate these oscillations. But this might change the story. There's also just unknown physics in collective neutrino oscillations. This is a relatively new field. In 2 months there might be something new that these things are completely reasonable to happen and could enhance the heating, but not yet that we know of. It's important to point out that these are still very important to consider because they'll still affect the final neutrino signal we measure on the Earth. It just won't affect the dynamics of the explosion itself. But these still will oscillate outside the shock radius. And you'll still get these spectral swaps. Okay, so that's everything. Yeah.
Questions for Evan?
I wonder, in your point of the Boltzmann treatment of neutrino oscillations, if you can really do that, because in Boltzmann treatment you evolve the neutrino distribution functions where you lose every information about phases. But for neutrino oscillations you have to evolve the density matrix where the phases are relevant.
Okay, so maybe the word Boltzmann is not the right word there.
So I can tell you, somebody's already written down the equations for, instead of a classical distribution function, a bigger function, essentially, a quantum mechanical kinetic equation for neutrinos for just this. Now, solving that equation is a different story, but the equations have been written down.
Okay, I had a question as well over here. Yeah, so I thought this expression you showed for the oscillation radius was very interesting. Another place that the neutrino spectrums can come in terms of the neutrino wind and the electron fraction of the wind. Obviously, this is happening at much larger radii than would normally affect that early times. But it did have this influence. It did have this factor dependent on the flux. So if you wait longer as the neutron star cools, in principle, this oscillation radius is moving in.
Yeah.
Is there any point where it could actually affect the freeze out of the neutrino wind? And
so people have looked at it. Okay. There's papers that is basically the same title as ours, but it's our process, nucleosynthesis, instead of Korklof's.
Okay.
So there's papers that those Friedland, I think, did that.
Is there a conclusion that it's helps or viable?
I don't think there's. One of their conclusions was you need to take multi-angle neutrino oscillations into account because this will change the radius at which the flip happens, so it'll change the evolution. But I didn't see anything super surprising in their final result based on that. But maybe someone else can comment on that.
Sorry for going about
some. Because I see some.
I think there have been some studies assuming spectra for neutrinos that will produce conditions for an R process, and then they conclude that collective neutrino oscillations will hinder the R process, at least the production of heavy nuclei.
Okay.
However, none of the current simulations predict neutrino spectra that will favor an R process. In fact, all simulations suggest currently that the jetta is proton-rich, not neutron-rich, and consequently you don't have conditions for an R process.
So, and it's not just the neutrino flux. As the neutrino sphere radius decreases, then you also gain something there. Yeah, okay.
Any more questions?
Yeah, besides our process, there should be this neutrino process or nucleosynthesis via through the influence of the neutrino. So can you comment on these neutrino oscillations on the nucleosynthesis in the outer layer?
So those are happening due to like electron captures or electron neutrino captures and anti-electron neutrino captures. I can't really robustly comment on it. I would expect if your spectra are harder, then you would have more. But there's also possibly the possibility that you have less total neutrinos when you oscillate. Well, that's not true. So in late times, you're... Okay, so let me restart. At late times, your spectra are very similar. And so once you oscillate your, if you do undergo oscillations, you might not notice anything. Maybe that will be my final answer. But because I mean, the plots you were showing, your luminosities and average energies were very similar at late times. And if you flip those spectra, I don't know if that's going to happen.
You said all your results were for an inverted mass hierarchy.
Yeah.
You thought about a sterile neutrino?
No. So normal hierarchy, this wouldn't happen at all. You wouldn't have to worry about this. You wouldn't have the swap happening at all. Except in, maybe like you were saying, there's cases you can construct that would do that, but they're not realistic to occur in nature. So you would need more heavy neutrinos than you have electron neutrinos. And so that doesn't happen.
Any more questions? Gabriel?
In fact, I will say that this doesn't happen. It's too strong. In fact, most of the current simulation shows that as a function of time, you go from a regime where you have larger fluxes for the new X to a regime where the new flux of new X is smaller than the one of
the new. But even after you divide it by 4,
Yes. In fact, they cross the flashes. I will show tomorrow some figures where you see
okay.
that.
Okay. So I didn't quite understand what you were saying.
In the plot, could you show your plot of your original spectra? So here you have assumed conditions where the flux for new X is larger than the flux for new X.
Yeah, so I have better plots that would. So this is.
No, I think the others show it also. So now, if you will take conditions for which the flux of new X is larger than the one of new E or new bar, then oscillations will also occur in normal hierarchy.
Yeah, that's not going to happen because
you see that that supernova models predict this crossing of fluxes.
The supernova models that predict that after 10 seconds or something, but not in the first second.
Yeah.
Well, we're not debating this.
No.
We're talking about these early phases where where the question that we addressed in this, that Evan addressed in this, was can these oscillations have an effect on the explosion, right? And in that context, in the normal hierarchy, you wouldn't expect anything. But I agree with you that at late times, interesting things happen.
So one question about the plot. You did have up your movie, your flipbook movie, with the spectra. So yep. The new X spectra there, do they include the influence of Bremsstrahlung? Are they softened by...
Sorry, can I say again?
The new X spectra here, the red lines?
Yeah.
Are the starting spectra, do they have Bremsstrahlung included? Have they been softened by the inclusion of Bremsstrahlung or only...
No.
They've only been caught...
No, they do. They have
do.
The Burroughs-Reddy-Thompson prescription.
Right. So there, so if somebody left off that, they would be even harder, right? Because it would all be from the E plus E
yeah.
minus.
Yeah.
Any more questions? Okay, let's thank our speaker once again.